You shouldn't have to explain in detail to anyone why you're taking a mental health day or why you're taking the day off. If you're working for a corporation like that, it's either time to change the culture or change the job. For entrepreneurs, I think that we can also tend to get caught up and be the worst bosses we could ever work for. And we end up working, you know, instead of working a 40-hour week, we'll work an 80-hour week.
Welcome to Latinx in Power, a podcast hosted by Thaisa Fernandes.
Welcome to Latinx in Power. Today, we are talking with Angel Aviles. Angel boldly decided to pursue her dream of becoming an actress. The Bronx native moved from New York City to Hollywood and landing roles on projects with up-and-coming directors like Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, and many others. Following her acting career, Angel became an entrepreneur. Today, she's a transformational life coach, a motivational speaker, and an advocate for social justice. Welcome, Angel.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Me too. So in this episode, we'll talk more about mental health. In 2009, Angel suffered from depression, anxiety, and panic attacks, which was when she began her own journey of mental, physical, and spiritual wellness. So first things first, what does it mean to be a Latina for you?
I saw this question and the first thing I thought was it means to be out of my head and to really be more about what it feels like. I want to talk about what it feels like, which is a warmth. I feel it in my chest. I feel it in my belly. I feel it in my spine. There's a sense of strength and warmth and comfort, nostalgia. Really, I think the one word I can think of is a Spanish word, and it's ser, which is to be. Mm-hmm. And I simply am what I am. When I think of the word, automatically visions and sounds of growing up and colors and tones and smells come to mind. And all of it is Latino, Latina, Latinx to me.
That's beautiful. I like that a lot. And we can be whatever we want. And the sense of like sit of being is different from anyone. Just beautiful. I love that.
I like it too, because I really think it's important for us to honor our own experience. This is part of mental wellness to me. Honoring our own experience means that we do a lot less comparison and more being in touch with our own selves as we occupy our internal space and also as we navigate our external world.
That's awesome. I'm feeling that I'm going to learn a lot today. I'm really excited. How did everything start?
Wow. This question, of course, when I saw it was like, you gave me 3 to 5 minutes to sum up the life of a 51-year-old woman. I think I would like to start way back when. I grew up, obviously, like you said, in the Bronx. I was born in New York City. I was born to a very theatrical, dramatic, Latino, lower middle class family. I describe in my book that we grew up in the hood, but I didn't really know we grew up in the hood simply because my mom was super creative. And she really taught me that the brain is everything. And as long as your brain is operating, you are unlimited. So we may be short on cash, but we're never short on ideas or short on creativity. So obviously, also in my book, I talk about something very traumatic that occurred to me, and that was molestation when I was very young. And I kept that in me and quiet for my entire adolescence and into my adulthood. And I really didn't address it until I had my own daughter. And I started to experience a sense of paranoia about her and what could possibly happen to her. And that's when I first started getting help for really processing the things that I had been going through. So during this entire time, I had been pursuing my acting career. I came to LA in the 90s and was able to land successful roles. I guess the most famous role, I don't guess, the most famous role, of course, was in Mi Vida Loca, which was in 1992. It continues to be a cult classic. I continue to receive just so much love for my character, who is Sad Girl. Aptly named, which is so crazy, life imitating art. So enjoyed success as an actor, went on, went back to school, studied multimedia production, went to work in several corporate jobs that I did not love, but provided a certain sense of security as I grew my family. Things were going well. And then my mom passed away. And this was another dramatic point in my life. I had lost my brother previously, and this was devastating. But losing my mom further on and at this particular period of my life just revealed so many of the little weaknesses in my life. She covered so much. And I had what most might effectively call a breakdown. It was just a breakdown of everything I was, spiritually, physically, emotionally. And I spent a good deal of time for about a year in 2008 crying in my closet and really wondering what I was doing on the planet. In 2009, I started to recognize that my kids were watching me through this process and I didn't want to be that for them. And also I recognized something inside of me wanted something more, wanted to survive, knew that I needed to get out of this. And I just started consuming everything I could. I started hiring coaches and gurus and doctors and all kinds of professionals and curanderas. Like, I pursued my mental wellness and my physical wellness with a fire and a passion like nothing I had ever done before. And I started documenting my journey. I started blogging about it. I started talking about it. I started sharing what I was going through and all of the ways that I was evolving. And people started responding to it. There were very few brown people on there. There were no Latinx people really, at least at that level, talking about these things, like in social media. And out of that experience grew a very organic coaching business, a coaching practice, where I primarily worked with women just like me, women who were transitioning in life and women who were servants and men too. I actually don't coach a lot of men, but I coach unicorn men. I coach the unicorns. And so I just started sharing what I was learning. And it's been a 10-year ride. I've had this practice since 2011. And I've really enjoyed the journey. Ultimately, I've been able to create a practice that reaches out to a population that doesn't ordinarily, that hasn't previously talked about these things openly. And it's my pleasure to see people thrive. That's and beautiful. Learn how to be well.
By the way, I never heard about the term unicorn man before. I'm going to use it starting today. That's amazing. And I think like reading your book, it was really inspiring just to get to know more about you, your story, and also like the way you saw things, right? You did many different things and of course you had challenges, but the way you saw them and the way you tried to make it better is just really, really inspiring. You touched in another point that I think it's really important to talk more about, and I'm curious to know your opinion about it. Why do you think our community doesn't prioritize our mental health?
I think one of the things that we deal with as a community is stigma. Previously, we haven't had a lot of representation in the mental health industry. And so I think there's a lot of cultural relevancy that's been missing and we haven't felt comfortable. So we haven't been able to maybe go out there and be treated for these things. Obviously, as a country, we're not doing great in terms of mental health. We have a long way to go in terms of mental health for everyone. And I think COVID-19 really revealed how much more work we all have to do, particularly in the Latinx community. I'm seeing many more therapists and doctors come out and talk about their experiences. You know, obviously, diversity, equity, and inclusion matter, especially in mental health. So in the end, I think that we will see some real progress in this area, but I think that it's been cultural, it's been economic, because it's also been super expensive to hire a great therapist. As more opportunities and options become available, I think we'll actually be able to stop the stigma and get the help that we need on a broader level.
Yeah, I hope so. That's amazing. What exactly is a mental health day?
There's actually a global mental health day, which takes place on October 10th, and it's World Mental Health Day. And I think it's most important to understand that a person doesn't need to have a mental illness to take a mental health day. A mental health day means simply you are taking time off from the stresses in your life. I always encourage people not to take a mental health day and then run a bunch of errands, you know, just to get things off their plate. I think that mental health really, it matters to be present. It matters to rest. It matters to actually add pleasure and really, really take that time to decompress and de-stress. So I also want to mention this, that it's really important for employees in particular. I'm going to say two things. Employees to recognize, you know, their handbook and look for their benefits, because employers should be legitimizing and offering mental health days. You shouldn't have to explain in detail to anyone why you're taking a mental health day or why you're taking the day off. If you're working for a corporation like that, it's either time to change the culture or change the job. For entrepreneurs, I think that we can also tend to get caught up and be the worst bosses we could ever work for. And we end up working, you know, instead of working a 40-hour week, we'll work an 80-hour week, and we will miss the opportunity to take a mental health day as well. But essentially, it's really taking stock of where you are in your mental, physical, and emotional health and determining that you are worth the rest.
Yeah, I like that you give more context to that. I think I only learned about that when I moved to the US. I don't know if it is a thing in Brazil. And I also recognize the importance of managers taking advantage of the mental health day and also helping to normalize that, right? And as you said, without giving an explanation, just using the time, not to run errands, but to use it for have fun or do other things that will make you feel good, right?
Yeah, thinking about how to connect to what makes you decompress and stress less. This is really, really paramount in taking care of yourself and your wellness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good reminder for me as well, especially like days off. I think this year, last year as well, like we tend to just do things that you're like waiting for a long time, run like errands, which is great as well, but it's also the importance of taking care of your body, your mind. It's so important. And I feel that our community, we don't talk about it. I think we are so used to hustle, and maybe sometimes we don't even feel that we deserve a day off or have fun. I think especially now.
That is a big thing that I work on with my clients, is this idea of working like a sort of living in a meritocracy. You know, the harder you work, you know, the more rewards you'll get, you know, you'll rest when you're dead. I've heard that before, and I think that it's literally killing us. There's nothing wrong with working. You know, we should work with pleasure. We should work because we need to live, and that's true. But what the quality of life exchange is really, really matters. Relationships matter. Your relationship with yourself, your relationship with the people that you're surrounded by, your relationship with the planet, your relationship with money, all of this, there needs to be a perspective and an overall balance to how, again, navigate your entire experience here.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I understand that sometimes it might also be a process where you first get to know more about yourself and your body and what your mind and body needs, that it might take some time for some of us. So I'm just curious, how do you know when you need a mental health day?
I think you nailed it. And the one thing I want to say is that we're constantly evolving. You know, it's learning your body, your mind, your spirit, and listening and recognizing when you're going through changes that are natural, when you're going through changes that are due to stress, recognizing, okay, how am I navigating this space? Is what's happening to me chemical? What's happening to me in my mind? And all of those things are legitimate. Like, I don't like when people say, well, that's all in your mind. Well, my mind is in my brain, which is the functional center of my universe, right? Everything happens in the brain. So yes, we are our thoughts, we are our actions, we are these complete beings. And so really, I call it like a conscious consumption, right? In conscious consumption, you're paying attention to all the things that you're consuming. It could be media, it could be data that you're taking in terms of conversations in your relationships. It could be the things that you're saying to yourself, especially the ones that you're saying out loud. It could be your food. It could be your water, your air. These are all things. Like sometimes when we're stressed, we don't even fully breathe. That's why one of the first chapters in my book is about breathing, because one of the things I recognized that was one of the number one contributors to my stress is that I wasn't giving myself full permission to breathe. And this is why when you become accelerated, right, your breath is shallow, you get higher in your octaves, you start to generate this level of stress. And you can see it, right? As I begin to physically show you what it looks like to be stressed, you feel that. You can feel that the breath stops here. So even taking a moment to just quiet down and breathe deeply and meditate. Meditating doesn't necessarily mean you're going to live on a mountain. It means just giving yourself time to be quiet, to recognize the signs that your body, mind, and spirit are saying, are showing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I really love your book because you talk about like everything we need to pay attention. It's not like it's been not a long time that I discovered those things, like stopping to breathe. Sometimes I'm anxious or I have something important, so I just stop to have like a deep breath just to try to calm myself, paying attention to what I eat. Exercise is something new to me. It's been like a year and a half that I'm exercising like 4 or 5 times a week, and I'm seeing the change that this like small thing, it's not small, it's a ton of work, but I'm seeing like the results, and it's helping my anxiety, a lot of other areas. And I was just like, this is so mind-blowing, just to pay attention of those small, like I'm making quotes now, like sleeping, eating, exercising, breathing, meditation. Is just like really, really interesting. And thank you for mentioning that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also like meditation, I think there's also a lot of misconceptions about that, as you said, that you need a huge amount of time and you need to be super zen, and just, which is not true.
It's not true. And there's so many forms of meditation that you can take. I mean, I mentioned a few in the book, but even beyond that, there's just, if you can think of an activity, there's a way to meditate within that activity. You know, swimming, walking, hiking, everything can be done with a consciousness, which puts you in a meditative state, obviously, right? It's just this constant connection to the quiet that lives within you.
Which advice would you give to someone who wants to incorporate more like mindfulness exercises to their lives?
So I think start simply and be graceful. So I started with breath because that is the one thing that we cannot live without. We cannot live without the breath. And connecting to the breath as the first thing is the simplest thing that you can do with, like, not even, you can be sitting in your chair listening to this podcast and you can start today. You can simply take a breath in through the nose and let it go all the way in, fill your lungs completely, and let it fill your belly, because actually filling your belly allows your lungs to expand to completion. And that way of breathing, you might get dizzy. So I don't want you to just do this anywhere. But when you start to breathe deeply, after not breathing deeply for maybe your whole life, you might take in more oxygen than you're actually used to. But I encourage you to continue to work on the breath and allow it to become a part of your overall system conditioning, right? Because part of the function, we need oxygen for every single activity in our lives, for our metabolism, for our respiration. Our every system in our body relies on oxygen. So that would be my first thing, because it's also, if I tell you not to focus on the breath, it becomes impossible not to, right? So it doesn't have to be, you don't have to eliminate all thoughts, or we don't have to be that complex. You can introduce mantras, and you can introduce chanting, and you can introduce silence, bells, bowls. It can be a beautiful extended wellness experience. But if you're new, simply taking in the breath and letting it go into your belly and then releasing it through the mouth, that one thing allows you to relax your nervous system and it can begin a world of wellness and benefits.
That's beautiful. Awesome. Thank you for sharing. How we can better help others. I imagine there's a lot of people who is listening to us that might be wondering how we can better help. We are living in a pandemic. There's a lot going on. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts about it.
So the number one way that you can help someone else is to be well yourself. Be an example of wellness. And in doing that, you become a demonstration of what it looks like to shamelessly live in the space that you're in, which may not be happy all the time. Maybe you allow yourself to cry, allow yourself to be angry, allow yourself to experience your emotions, allow yourself to monitor how you're taking in information and processing that information. Make the observation about yourself, whether what you're feeling may not be normal and maybe I should go see a therapist or a doctor. I'm a coach. I'm not a therapist or a doctor. And I do an assessment with my clients because I don't want to work with a client who I can't actually help. And very often I recommend the therapist, you know, because there's certain traumas that should be worked on. So being able to recognize that in yourself is paramount to being able to help anyone else. Because it's harder for you to say, hey, I think you should probably think about therapy, or maybe you should think about therapy, if you've never done it yourself, or if you have some kind of judgment or stigma about it. Number two, and I also want to pull back that and say, even if you've never been to therapy, as long as you've observed that there are therapies that are beneficial and you believe in the practice, then it's easier for you to pass on that information to help others. The other thing I want to say is that these, I'm going to give you two numbers, right? And these are extremely important. Suicide is real. And if you've known anyone or have lost anyone, it's devastating. It leaves the impact of guilt on so many people figuring, oh my gosh, what could I have done? Don't keep it a secret. The National Suicide Prevention line is 1-800-273-8255. Write that down in a book. If you ever hear someone talking about suicide or if you're suicidal yourself, please do not hesitate to get that help. There's also a crisis text line and you can text HOME to 741-741. A crisis is anything, again, where you're feeling like you don't want to be here. You're considering ending your life. Before you go a step further, please make that call. If you've heard anybody on your social media channels or anywhere else, do that. Third is, of course, empathy. Have some empathy. A little bit of empathy goes a long way. And empathy is just leaning in and letting people be, not necessarily trying to fix what it is, because we're not professionals in every area, right? Not even all therapists are professionals. Not even all doctors are professionals in every area that's needed. And so helping someone by sometimes validating their feelings, because feelings are real, whether they can be justified or we cannot judge someone else's feelings. So just a little empathy goes a long way. We're all doing the best that we can to cope with everything that we've been given.
Yeah, thank you for sharing those resources. We are going to link to the description of this episode, the resources you mentioned, the phone numbers, so people can take advantage of that or just know those numbers and that those resources exist. And you touched on a really interesting point that we might not have all the answers, and just to also acknowledge feelings. And I feel that sometimes people, they just want to be heard. They might not need an advice, or they might not want an advice, but they just want to share as well. And I think it's totally fine, right? And just the act of listening, I think it's really powerful as well.
Yeah. And also, as you begin that process, you recognize that it's not necessarily about fixing things. And when you detach from having to fix something, you also detach from the outcome, right? You detach from, well, I gave you that advice already, and you should have done this, which is not helpful to someone's mental health. So if you find that you feel stressed by someone else's stress, this is a perfect time to say, hey, you know, I know this therapist, I know this coach, I know this, you know, there's so many people, I know this doctor, there are so many people that are out there. The more familiar you can be with the resources that are available, the more helpful you can be.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Just detach from giving an advice, I think. Or the outcome is just, yeah, that's powerful. I like that a lot. Yeah, do you want to talk more about your book as well? We are also going to link to the description of this episode, and I just read yesterday, so I'm really excited to be talking more about it as well.
The book was 10 years in the making. So from a perspective of a person who is a creative, I would like to encourage anyone out there that if you feel the itch to do something very similar to you, you decided that you were going to make this podcast and it was going to be a gift to yourself, a gift to your younger self, which is a beautiful thought. Same thing for any of you who have been journaling or writing and really feel that you want to create a book. I wrote a book. I self-published it. It's been phenomenal. And I'm so grateful that I did it. It took me 10 years. I had a lot of things to get over, but I'm grateful that I finished it and that it's begun to help so many people to address, begin their journey to really loving themselves. So I want to encourage you authors out there, you aspiring creatives, you podcasters, you actors, give yourself permission to create. Being creative is a very important part of the overall wellness process. I believe that creativity is something that's magical, right? In various philosophies, we are created in the version, in the vision of the creator. And so the creator creates. And so we also have this urge to create. So why not fuel that?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are looking for permission, we are both giving you permission to do whatever you want, right?
Yes, write that damn book, do that show, do your YouTube channel. There's been no greater time than now to do what you came here to effing do and stop waiting for somebody else to tell you it's okay or not okay. There's nobody that's going to do it for you. It's just give yourself the permission to do it. I also wanted to say that in addition to being creative, one of the things that I really found hard to write about in my book was forgiveness. Forgiveness is a huge part of wellness, and it was a huge part of my deliverance into pursuit of being well. So any lingering, there's trauma. And if there's trauma that's linked to that, your ability to forgive, handle it. Don't let it go another day without you getting the help that you deserve, period. You deserve it. And don't let anyone shame you or make you feel bad about getting the help that you deserve. And third and final thing that I'll say that has really contributed to overall wellness, and maybe I'll answer a question that you had asked, but you said, were there any books or movies that I would recommend? And when I thought about that question, I said, you know, I don't want to recommend the things that worked for me per se. I want to recommend the feeling that worked for me. The feeling that worked for me most was laughter. So find things that make you laugh. You know, there's something, obviously, there's something physiological that happens when you laugh. When you laugh, you release chemicals, and these are happy chemicals. Let yourself laugh and experience pleasure. Laughter is one form of pleasure. I encourage all forms, just saying. But I would say my favorite movies are the ones that make me laugh. And I definitely encourage that.
I love that. Perfect. That was amazing. I'm feeling really inspired at the moment. You gave me a lot to think more about it and keep in mind. And I'm going to leave this last minute for you to share anything you want to share and where people can find you as well.
So I can be found on Instagram at Angel Awakened, which is also my website, www.angelawakened.com. You can find me on Facebook, and it's Angel Aviles, Too Happy to Be Sad Girl. I'm also Too Happy to Be Sad Girl on Twitter. I also want to share that I do have a junto, which is a weekly gathering of like minds. It's a group coaching and joining together of like minds. And I open that up every month to members that can come in and just be encouraged to grow. It's based on the framework that I've taken dozens of clients through, and it's a super nourishing place to come and be well.
Beautiful. I love that. We are going to link all those resources to this episode as well. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. That was awesome.